All right, so we'll go ahead and get started. All right, welcome everybody to today's Paper Profits Mastermind Group training call. It is March 22nd, 2016. We are live here in sunny San Diego. It is sunny, so that's always a treat. Here's what we're going to cover today. We just have a few updates and announcements. Then we're going to proceed on, turn the time over to Travis and Kristen, going over some newly inked cash flow case studies. And then we'll open it up to Q&A. And we will resume our regular broadcasted schedule in a couple weeks for the next expert training call, which we'll announce here shortly. And we also have the workshop coming up this week. So here's the mastermind dates, just so you can jot those on your calendar and be prepared. They're all currently scheduled to be held in San Diego. Our first preference is having them close by the office up here in North County where the Capstone Funding Group headquarters is. Preferably at the office. If we exceed that seat count, then we'll move over to a venue. If that's the case, we'll go over to the Hilton Garden Inn or the Courtyard, which most of you have been over to those couple places right there, since most people are either coming from up north or flying in to town. So April 21st and 22nd, please, please, please RSVP so we can get a head count. Just log into the members area, click on the events, or you can go to this URL, notetools.com/members/event-calendar, and you can log in and go straight to that page. So if you'd be so kind to RSVP, and if it's you and a spouse or you and a business partner, we'd appreciate that. We have July 14 and 15 after that, then November 10 and 11. We have our workshop this week, March 24th and 25th in Las Vegas. If you haven't already RSVP'd, remember, that's a benefit for all active members. So you can go to the events calendar page and once you've logged into the members area and RSVP there. I believe we have the Orgels coming. We have, I think, Dirk's coming out. Pilar and Gina are coming out. I believe Dolly is coming out. So we look forward to seeing you all there and networking and hugging and sharing what we got going on. We'll be covering performing notes, re-performing notes, going over highlights on MPNs, REOs, and primarily sharing case studies. So this isn't just as a disclaimer, so we're all on the same page and you know what to expect is, as members, the majority of these people are coming to these workshops for the first time. Primarily, most of them are new to notes, maybe haven't even done a transaction. Yet, and even some people in the group are still getting going on your first transaction, so that's great. So this isn't so much as an advanced session, or it'll be more fundamentals, basics, and some exercises and sharing best practices and case studies. That's what we're holding these special mastermind dates for, so we can come together, go over some advanced strategies, share what's working, some of the struggles we're having as well. Discussing files that we're working on and some successes and challenges and really collaborating and coming together and letting us, you know, lend our expertise and, you know, what we have going on, and then also asking you to provide your expertise and all come together and help each other and network and be a great community. So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page for that. Travis and I were discussing that last night in the office. So did you have any comments about the upcoming things we have going on, Travis? Did that pretty much sum it up?
I'll just add in one quick thing here. There's time. Both Chris and I are taking time away from, you know, working on our actual portfolio to come do these workshops as well. And we're not teaching the entire time. So we do have some members that have said, hey, I'd like to come. Yes, I'd like to network, like to hear the fundamentals again. But they've also said, I'd like, you know, some time with either you or Kristen to talk about stuff kind of in our off, just when we're not teaching, or vice versa, when Aaron isn't up presenting, same type of deal where obviously the team's there and available and a chance to get together. And if you like, need a reason to get away to Las Vegas, we don't do them there as often, but just to maybe add that for those of you that want to get some one-on-one time, that's a great place to do it.
Awesome. Very good point. Okay, so we already discussed the March workshop. We will be doing a special one-day event after the April workshop, so that I'll go be on Saturday the 23rd, going over some the scheduled topics for that is asset management and underwriting strategies. I was huddling up with Kristen last week on, so we'll have more details coming up for that. If we do have a weekly distribution list, some of you are already on that, some of you are not. If you want to be on that, just drop me an email and I'll add you to that listserv, and we can send that over to you. We have a couple REO sources that send us their product that they have available. It's more or less a firm price that they're that reserve price that they have. So this isn't like a bid or, you know, of course anything can be negotiated. So you're welcome to do that if you find something that would, you know, cause the price to be different. So at the beginning of April, if you're already on the list for the bidding platform and you want to pick up some of those assets, we'll send out that email as well. If you're interested in any of the inventory over on Capstone Funding Group's portfolio, just drop Travis a line and he can tell you what we have over there and work on that. We'll be rolling out a series of webinars and calls just so you can see the inventory that we have, what's available, and how you can purchase that and get going with that. So we look forward to that. So any questions or points of clarity for people? Let's see, Jan asks, will you be adding a registration link for the April PPMG workshop and the one-day event, or shall we just... The link for the April PPMG workshop, I'll check with John and see if that's, I think you can just RSVP. I think I had that on you can just go to the members area and click on the events and you can RSVP for the April mastermind. And then I think the 23rd workshop might be on there as well. If not, we'll get that on there and you can RSVP for that as well. Okay. Very good question. Any other questions? Just chat them over there in the questions box and we'll get to those throughout. Travis, are you wanting to take questions throughout the case studies and leave that open or just have them
absolutely.
Chat them in and you'll get to them? Okay, great.
Yeah, so absolutely. We'll go through it and Kristen, I'll be monitoring it while Kristen's talking and vice versa. And we'll be going through
awesome.
It. So highly encourage questions as it relates to the case study during the case study. And if it leads to something else that's maybe more generic, that's fine too. And we will go
awesome.
From there, read them for us. But one of the things we wanted to do today, you guys, one thing that's happened to us multiple times throughout the time that we've been working with non-performing notes, and quite frankly, we've bought several performing notes or reperforming notes, whether you're getting them back on track and they're now performing again, or whether you bought them as performers and they go into default. A lot of times what ends up happening is you have to be Johnny on the spot and you know, get that asset back on a performing basis. And it takes just a little, it takes some work. And what I found, if you leave that in the hands of a servicer all the time, sometimes it doesn't get done at the speed you want it to get done. And, you know, certain requirements per a servicing contract are done, but there's nothing really above and beyond that that's done. And I don't mean that, you know, to be a negative light on your servicers. It's just they did what they were supposed to do. And just say this, no one cares about your loan as much as you do, right? So a common occurrence that we see is that once we move from a servicer, when we purchased a loan, a lot of times just in the servicing transfer, a loan can go non-performing. And we had that happen on a particular loan we want to talk about today. And just kind of go through the process and just have Kristen talk a little bit about that. And if this is an area where if it happens to you guys, which sometimes it happens, it's a performing note when you purchase it. And for whatever reason, the servicing transfer happens and the payments aren't quick to come in. And so it just, you know, somebody needs to do something, right, to make this happen. So we just want to talk about that today. And then maybe towards the end. So this is an actual asset that we have, and we acquired this asset initially just to hold long term, which we still may do. But towards the end of the case study, what we can do is go through it with you guys and just have you do a little practice on as though this was your loan and you had decided to take some profit in the short term and you have an investor that's looking for a certain yield, and we need you guys to set that up and prep it for them as though you're looking to liquidate that loan and use the proceeds for something else, or at least your profit. So we'll get into that here in just a minute. So let's jump into this. And this is a California subperformer. When we bought it as a subperformer, yet California commands a high price. And subperforming in this case, Kristen, would it be safe to say that it was just more of a slow pay versus gaps? I mean, they had kind of gotten into trouble, modded it again, and got back on track. And then obviously at the time we got it, it went non-performing and we had to kind of jump on things. But would that be safe to say on this particular asset?
Yes, that would be safe to say.
Yeah. You guys that are watching can see the slides there. Does this look like this person's going anywhere? Beautiful new home, Menifee, California. For those who don't know where that is, just south, just north of Temecula and Murrieta. They're a beautiful little area. I used to live and travel within this area quite often. And you can just see small lot, but a big old house. And one of those things where I thought, man, this would be a house if they didn't want to pay. You'll see in a minute why we would have been happy to have foreclosed. But let's just jump into that. So you can see we've got a decent chunk of change into this loan. This is how we booked this asset in on the actual pool purchase that we were a part of. But that's our QuickBooks number, if you will. And we'll keep going. So talk us through this a little bit, Kristen. I want to have you be involved here. I know you're going to talk quite a bit. But what were some of the things as we were doing our initial due diligence that had us a little bit concerned? Even though it was subperforming, looked like it had some emotional equity.
Definitely emotional equity was present. And, you know, I really wanted there to be full coverage on this one only because, you know, I was starting to pack my bags, you know, it was just up the neighborhood.
Now expand on pack your bags, because the minute this went non-performing, we had Kristen already getting ready to move into the house. So, you know, that's, you could see by the house, it was just beautiful. But great FICO, 707. So, you know, we were sitting there thinking we're a little bit underwater if we push the issue and foreclosed. You know, we always look at what would the likelihood of a bankruptcy be, but there was no active bankruptcy, no history of bankruptcy, and a great credit score. So we thought, you know.
And you know what else we knew before we bought it, based on just the stale credit that was provided, was that there's tons of student loans with a high FICO and performing student loans. It's a good indicator that they have a career-based job, so that, you know, career-based jobs are easier to be reemployed. So with the layers of a high FICO, never filed BK, student loans, car leases, all paid as agreed, I had I knew that this borrower could have been rehabilitated very quickly.
And property taxes, which in that area, you know, they're not cheap, and they have been paid, right? And we'll see about that in a minute. It was owner occupied. So just a few things that we found out. You know, today the market's been on our side since we acquired the property. It's bumped up a little bit in value. But line two there, Kristen knows I'm always asking this question. I'm like, is there a deferment on the mod, and what's the interest rate? And sure enough,
really want to point out to you guys, when you're doing your due diligence, when you're looking at your credit reports, the amount that's going to be on the credit report is that 266,250.97. So if you see a credit report that's flagged HAMP mod, or there is a term extension of it's 360 months and it's been originated since 2000. Those are little indicators that they have reset the AM schedule, maturity dates pushed out. These are indicators that a HAMP mod is somehow involved in the senior lien. And with that being said, you could be skipping out on a deferment. So just be cautious when you're performing your due diligence.
Great, great point. And that's one that, you know, I learned probably 6 to 8 months into the business that I wish I would have known right up front before buying any loans. Our equity position that I thought was an equity position on several loans we had bought was not an equity position. So definitely some gold there and Kristen's tip there. Now guys, again, we're talking today, this is a second mortgage note, okay? So a second deed of trust on this particular asset. I know some people are primarily doing firsts and we, you know, if you're like us, we have a transition to where we're increasing the allocation of our overall portfolio to more firsts and land contracts. We're heavily weighted in junior liens, and we've been okay with that. We just feel like, you know, as the market shifts, at this point we want to be ready for a market shift. So today's case study obviously is going to be regarding this subperforming junior lien, and stay tuned for more on some other things we're doing on other assets. So comment real quick, Kristen, the actual lien had been modified an additional time from its previous original note amount with the previous servicer. It had already been modified one time as they had fallen behind.
Yes.
And you can see that there, and you guys will see that coming up. And one of the things that the borrower had actually had concerns with, this is a home that they want to stay in long term after Kristen kind of dug in, but you'll note there that there's a balloon, and that was, you know, a concern to the borrower. But you'll see here that they weren't that far behind. They'd only been, and this literally was, you'll see the delinquent interest and the late fees correspond with the servicing transfer. So they were current up through the servicing transfer on this new modification. And then from there, you'll see as we move forward here.
And Travis, you see that it's very common with people and internet and commercials and fraud, people, you know, things that are taking place in our environment. People are very leery on just giving their money to anyone. And, you know, I know that everyone's received some marketing material in the mail that you know, somewhat looked legit, but it's just marketing material. So people, you'll see it is trending that when transfer services, you know, it transfers hands, it's somewhat common to see a performer go to sub only because it's switched hands and they're easy to get back on track.
Exactly. Talk about this reason for default, because you guys will run into this and you just got to be ready for it and to be able to do a quick underwrite. And, you know, they were tough to get a hold of initially, but once, write down these two words again, guys, response deadlines. Once Kristen turned up the heat on some response deadlines, we got the bar to really step up and work towards a resolution here.
Yeah.
What and some things that jumped out at you here on this reason for default?
Once I had a conversation with the homeowner, I could tell just from the first sentence in the conversation, she was one of those people that felt not necessarily that it's a hardship that is a legitimate hardship, but more of a, my neighbor has 2%, so why shouldn't I? You know, it was kind of I quickly picked up on the situation. It was sometimes what people create as a situation inside their heads. It's not a real legitimate situation, but it's their situation. So if you ask anybody their problem, well, their problem is more important than the next person's. So if you ask an underwriter, they didn't really display very much hardship, but as a homeowner, she had, you know, severity of the hardship. So basically, in a nutshell, she is a full-time student, but she does work part-time. Now, when I dived in and I was asking her, you know, those for those of you that are newer to the group, the intake call checklist in the members area is kind of what I stick to every phone call, these conversations, so you'll kind of know what questions to ask the homeowner to get a kind of a little picture of what's really going on. So I got enough information that she's a full-time student and she works for a hospital doing her, you know, she's passed her intern. She's going to be a nurse practitioner. So she's in line to be making really good money in the future. So for right now, she's still making $50 an hour. So if you do the math, I did ask her how much she gets paid and how often she gets paid. Those are two critical questions that you have to know to be able to intelligently understand how much income is going to be coming into the household. If you do semi-monthly and instead of bi-weekly, well, you're shorting them two paychecks. That would be shorting you money freed up for residual to put in your pocket for your second mortgage. So the borrower's paid bi-weekly. That means they get paid 26 checks in a year, $50 an hour, 72 hours every 2 weeks. That's about 93 gross. If you break it down divided by 12, that's roughly 7,800 gross. So she is a full-time student, but she is working part-time. I asked if there was any other contributors, and she said that her husband, he lives in the property and works, but he just doesn't want to. He refuses to pay. He refuses to contribute anything to the household. He's not on the note. So this is something that you guys should all know. Per the CFPB, if the person is not on the note, you cannot make them provide income documentation. Now, if they provide tax returns and that person is present on the tax returns, it's constituted as voluntarily providing it to you. If it's voluntarily provided it to you, you as the underwriter can deem it necessary to use the income and not omit it from the underwrite. If it's not voluntarily provided to you, they are not on the note, they're not financially obligated to pay you back, so you have to use whom is obligated, and in this case, it's just the homeowner, which is the borrower that's making $7,800 per month.
Okay, great.
One critical note as an underwriter, I just want you to know that it's very, very important because sometimes borrowers go dark. So anytime you have a borrower on the line, get as much information that you possibly can out of that borrower on that initial call. Just in the event that they don't call back for months, at least you got enough pieces of the story to at least pencil a deal. Not necessarily pen it, but at least you can pencil it to kind of like plan your exit strategy, even though the borrower has gone dark. So that critical note at the bottom, make sure you're when you're underwriting and you have the borrower on the phone, make sure that you get everything, you know, you're doing that verbal underwrite as you go through the call so that once you do get that financial package, you can kind of make sure that it's on track. Now, after I did this preliminary review, in my opinion, it's absolutely justified and the borrower displays the ability to be able to bring themselves current and sustain the new monthly payment that we decisioned the loan to be in.
Very good. One comment that I had, that it's a question we've been asked in the past, and you know, the intake form that Kristen mentions on the phone call, so some people that are on the call today and then others in the group, they're working through a servicer, and the servicer is assisting with a loan mod, and you can ask your servicer if they've got some sort of an intake form that you can look at just to make sure they're asking for things that you guys want to know. And then you can just kind of compare that. That's something we've had people do, but it's not required to do that. You might just leave it up to them. But at the end of the day, you're looking to do the best possible job on underwriting this file. So just something to consider. So we're going to jump into this. Go ahead.
You know, if anybody's interested, everybody here or most everybody has a home, call and ask for a modification and let them walk you through what they're going to be talking about. That'll be like true exposure of a real deal.
Look at you getting a modification for everybody. Order it. Everyone else gets one. My neighbor's got 2%. Why can't I have 2%?
All right. So before, there's a couple questions that came in. So it asked, what's no senior lien payment on the tape? Occasionally, when you're doing your due diligence, some of the tapes will have blanks, meaning there's no information. So it's just when I was looking at the original tape that I had for this lien, that there was no senior monthly payment, so that it just had a blank. So I kind of had to rely on other sources, as such as the credit report that was provided to get that senior lien payment. Okay. Second question that came in was, what does skipping out on a deferment mean? And what we are talking about there, Michelle, is that if you're just going off of a credit report and you see that you have full equity position in set from second position, let's just use it as an example. Even for first, for that matter, when you're looking at the how much the lien is for, well, on the credit report, it's going to only show the unpaid principal balance. When folks get modifications, in a step in the waterfall for the banks to approve the modifications, they may very well have to defer a chunk of the principal balance to the back of the loan as a silent second. So it's still due in full. If you were to order a payoff, that silent non-interest bearing portion would be part of the payoff. But if you just look at a credit report, that portion they're not paying interest on, so it wouldn't appear as their unpaid principal balance. Only the interest bearing portion will show up on a credit report. So what that means is that when you get your payoff, what you thought you had full equity position, as such as your first lien was $250,000. But the senior lien holder modified the loan and deferred $250,000. So at the end of the day, the full payoff would be $500,000.
Great. Do you have anything to add, guys? Great questions. No, that's outstanding. Great. Two great questions there. Guys, keep chiming in. The engagement here, chances are your question is the same question somebody else has. So feel free to ask it. All right, jump into the timeline here. You can see this is a recent loan that we bought.
Yeah, and then we'll go back to the questions. There's more questions coming in. All right, so the note was purchased and it was, you know, moved swiftly through the system. I immediately started doing my post-funding due diligence and sent out my letters, and then quickly received a call from the homeowner, triggered from an internal demand. Okay, so once I did have that phone call with the borrower, I was going through my intake call checklist and asking and trying to obtain as much information as I possibly can, outlining the process that she's going to be going down, and just going ahead and you know, outlining her to get me the financial package as soon as possible. Okay, so I did the verbal underwrite over the phone. Another reason why I like to do that is when you don't know these people, you know, they can tell you anything that they want to tell you. So what I like to do is use it a little exercise, and that what you tell me on the phone, and then when I get your financial package, I bump the information against each other, and were you telling the truth? That kind of goes to show you what kind of character you have. So that's kind of another reason why I always try to do a complete verbal underwrite of the financial situation during the phone call, as well as cross-referencing once the package comes in. Okay? Many conversations took place between myself and the homeowner because she was just, you know, she wanted the balloon removed, she wanted a rate reduction, she wanted a no down payment, she wanted me to wait until she remodified her first mortgage because she didn't think 3% was the best she could do. And so we, you know, I had to break it to her that, you know, that's, you know, you make $93,000 working part-time, you're not going to get another mod. So we just kind of pushed on, and once she got over that part, you know, I broke it down for her that she's already got the 31% HAMP best rate. It's the floor rate. You don't qualify for anything else. So I refreshed the dates. You know, I'm really good about, soon as management gives me my approval, I am on it and I get that thing out the door. I get an email, always get an email, always get approval to send it via email per FDCPA, and then also always get a cell phone so that you have a good way to follow up. If you do ask the homeowner if you have permission to leave a message on the cell phone, then you are protected from FDCPA as well.
One comment, Kristen, just on that point there, submitted terms for management approval. You know, when Kristen and I were talking, she was saying, okay, definitely rate sensitive and would like to try and lower their payment and would like to remove the balloon. Well, those are two things that you're giving up as a lender that favor you. And so in this case, I think she had paid in, what was it, 4 or 5 years on the original mod. And so for us, we said, okay, great. What was it?
Over 5, because she was moving into her 6th year.
Yeah, exactly. And so one of the things that we said, it's like, okay, she wants a lower payment and a lower rate. And I wasn't willing to back off much, but we extended out the term. And, you know, to pick up another 60 months. And it was one of those things where she's like, okay, you can have your lower rate and your lower payment. It wasn't even that much. You know, like $25 a month, but to her, I guess, you know, she felt good, wanted to take the deal. We had put a response deadline out there that, you know, hey, either take this deal, this is what management's approved, or, you know, we've got to, you know, Kristen's got to, how do you word that again? Kristen has some really good wording.
A really good point is that, you know, like Travis mentioned, it's all about response deadlines and holding people accountable, right? But just because you go past your, you know, your response deadline, you know, it's good to add a little clause to your emails or whatnot, saying that you as a lender, you don't have the obligation to renew this offer. It's your choice. So if you put a mod out there with a real tight deadline, so people actually, you know, make a decision quickly and get on the road, well, just because it passes that deadline, you as a lender, you could choose to renew some obligations, but you don't have to if you disclose that. So a modification went out on this gal, but it did get stale because she was giving me such pushback on a down payment. So I did have to refresh some dates. But we here at Capstone, we choose to have very, very, very tight deadline response deadlines. That's our choice.
Very good.
So by all means, if you know, this is the beauty of this business, you get to make your own rules, the golden rule, right? So you have the gold, you make the rules. If you want to have 30 days for them to respond, well, that's on you. I can't even sleep at night unless I know that they're accepting the deal. So I have to have short deadlines or I will lose my mind.
Well, and one comment to that I know Kristen is very good at, you guys, is when she does use a short window, she is saying, now, if anything, now does that, and she gets agreement from the borrower. Now, does that give you enough time, right? And if they say yes or no, then obviously the deadlines, you know, can be moved a bit. But here's what's important that I think is, you know, there's a lot of trend. We're a new relationship with a new lender, and there's training that goes on that, you know, you're giving them little tests, and it's like, now if for any reason you're not able to meet this deadline, I need you to get in touch with me via phone or email, and you're giving them a chance to like get back at, you know, to continue the dialogue, because we all know when someone's, you know, when life gets tough, you know, we want to see if they're giving priority to this particular line item on their budget, which happens to be the roof over their head, which is just a small little detail, unless they want to, you know, sleep in their car with their family, right? So very good comments. Any questions coming in, Kristen, as
yes,
we move forward
actually,
here?
I have some really great questions. This is awesome. So
well, let's do that right now while we're on this screen.
Okay. So is there a way to ask that does not violate the CFPB, but compels them to tell you about other income from others on the loan? So when you're doing your initial call and you're running through, I need to verify your mailing address, the last 4 digits of your social, what's the best time to reach you, do you have an email, how many heads in the household, how many adults, Oh, so you have three contributors. Go ahead and if you have for go ahead and submit income for all contributors so that it can be used to better your situation. So you're not saying, hey, I'm not going to underwrite your file unless you give me everyone that's in the household, but you're loosely
big no-no.
Exactly. So it's just, hey, do you have any other contributors? Okay, go ahead and include those contributors' income in the package so that we can use it to make it a benefit. If they're benefiting by giving you this information, it doesn't always work.
It's about them. It's about them. Yeah. That's why I love that Kristen does that, because it's all about them. It's not about us. It's about bettering their situation. So that's a great little tip.
Okay, and then let's see. How do we get the deferment amount? The best way to get the deferment amount is to order a payoff through phone banking. And just make sure and be cautious that until you own the loan via assignment, you can use any sources that you want. Everything's free, everything's public records, unless it isn't going to incur a payoff demand fee for the homeowner. There's only certain states, Georgia, Florida, California. But if you hit the prompting on the phone banking, it's going to tell you if it's going to incur a fee. Okay. If you can't get it, obtain a payoff that route, you can always rely on your civil code letter as a junior lien holder. It is civil code for you as a senior lien holder to give you as a junior your vested interest and know what the amount of due paid in. So you can get a reinstatement if it's not current, and you have the rights to a payoff if it is current. At times you have to jump through some hoops because not all people are receptive to know the civil code laws. You just get a fax number and fax it over and then follow up. Typically it's going to be faxed to you in 7 to 10 days. The easier way to get it is to do the phone banking, but please don't incur a fee until you have the borrower's authorization. Okay, next question. How do you know if there is a deferred second? Would it show on the credit report? Typically, there you don't find deferred seconds as much as you do firsts. And if you are asking about a prior servicer has modified and put it into a balloon like this situation, when you get your collateral package, that modification will be included in the collateral package for you to perform your due diligence.
Great questions. Any more before we jump ahead?
Let's see, one more. So is it entirely possible that we won't know about a silent second of deferred balance? You will not know until you obtain a payoff, or you can get an actual copy of the if you get a copy of the actual mortgage security instrument, the deed, the modification, then it will outline that silent second for you.
That's typically, guys, if you're able to get that, it's rare that you can get a copy of a loan mod agreement unless it's public record recorded on the first mortgage. It's pretty tough to get that, which you'll see coming up here. Why we always stiff for it as part of, it's a condition on getting a loan modification done. So, and we'll talk about that. So can we jump ahead here to the next slide? We're good.
I got two more questions. One's on a BK7.
This is pretty good today. We got a lively bunch. I'm impressed.
On a BK7, if the borrower reaffirms the debt, then does all their arrears come back into life and you can now negotiate the arrears? If they're reaffirming the debt, that means they're removing it out of the bankruptcy plan altogether, and you can treat it as a non-active bankruptcy loan. Why do I do a verbal underwrite on the phone? And do you also mention what they can afford back on them to the call? The first question is one of the questions on that first call is, how much funds do you have available to put towards the arrearages, and what monthly payment would you say that you feel comfortable putting, and of course I'm the homeowner advocate. I'm on your side, and that's my strategy to get them in my court so they won't go dark. So So, you know, when I'm doing that verbal underwrite, it's a very, very, it's a soft conversation, and it's building their confidence and trust in me that I'm on their side. I'm going to go to bat for them. So I always try to slip that in there. So how much do you feel comfortable paying every month? I'll go to bat for you. How much funds do you have available? You know, those are kind of like little sweet tricks to try to get a true picture of what's really going on. You'll be surprised if you just sit back and listen. People will just go on and on and on about their life story and tell you anything that you may want to know. How much have you seen deferred? What's the biggest deferment you've seen, Travis?
$227,000 got deferred. That's the biggest one I've seen in dealing with, at least from the seconds. I've heard of people deferring more, but that's the biggest one I saw, was $227,000.
Yeah, and Dirk asked about if you buy those notes and get a big, a nice deferred balance, that's a nice surprise. And we get so excited when the payoffs come in and there's no deferments or...
Or better yet, when a deferment previously, which this happens very rarely, but it can happen and has happened for us, where deferments, we made all of our decision making on the deferment, and for whatever reason, the deferment went away. So that's why we always try to get a copy of the loan mod and say, hey, what the heck happened? Or did they get another loan mod in the process? So anyway, okay, guys, we're running short on time. Great questions. Let's keep rolling. Okay. We want to keep you guys going. So again, here's our numbers. We had no foreclosure trustee fees or bankruptcy attorney fees. We did have boarding and monthly servicing fees. So you can kind of see there's an all-in number on this particular loan. So we went ahead, and as part of this workout, which is coming up, we were able to get a online payment there that came in for the $1,500, came in later than we'd hoped, but it finally did get to our office. And talk about this modification that we did, Kristen.
Well, first, that down payment, man, Travis busted my chops every day. It ain't coming. It's not coming. You're crazy. So the day that thing came, I was just so happy to show him. Just so excited.
I was ready to foreclose and get a 3% loan on a house up in Menifee and do a wraparound mortgage on that thing. I was like, wow, that's amazing. So but anyway, keep going.
You know, really, in a nutshell, there wasn't too much. This was a fairly no-brainer. It was not much, there was not much to play with. She was not very past due. There was no hardship present. In my opinion, I totally adhered to the CFPB ability to repay guidelines, even though with this second mortgage, I'm exempt, but I do always honor the CFPB. So it was absolutely justified as an underwriter that we went ahead. Now, if you're asking why you did what you did, now she gave us some pushback, so we got the $1,500 as a down, because there was some extra. Because she had been 6 months down or 4 months down, I apologize. There was some additional lates and fees and lender fees that we wanted to go ahead and recover before we reset her as a permanent modification. So we went ahead and chose to get the $1,500 down and to put her in a trial period for 6 months to get that $3,900 additional before we reset her. Because again, I know I've said this before, but when you're keeping people in a trial, you're keeping them in default. So if they do fall down, you could pick up exactly where you left off. When you're permanently modifying a loan, that means you are bringing that loan contractually current. Okay, that's the difference between a trial and a perm. So we went ahead and made sure that we can get her on that strong track, good pay record, $650 for 6 months. Her new UPB is the 108 at 5.75 rate, and we pushed out term extension, 360 months for a monthly payment of $630.38. If you remember, her original scheduled payment was $649 and change. I think it was $649.30 to be exact. So you can clearly see that, yeah, we reduced your, she asked for a payment reduction and we reduced her payment. We did everything that we said we were going to do. Now just do what you say. So in our opinion, we chose, she does not qualify. It's not justifiable to waive anything. So in this, for the incentives portion.
You left my phrase in there. Like normally under the incentives, there's some sort of incentives. And, you know, we use Google Slides prepping for calls, guys, but I typed that in there and there were no incentives on this one. I typed that in for Chris. I said, just pay your stinking mortgage. That's the incentive to stay in your house.
Hey,
so
I think it's
a little bit of internal there that we probably should have taken that out of the slides, but it looks good. I think it's okay staying there. That's the incentive, right? You get to stay with a roof over your head, nothing waived. So
yeah, this is a 5-bedroom, 5-bathroom, beautiful house in California, and she pays $2,000.
So let's look at this. Let's jump to this next one. You guys can kind of see just some of the languaging there. Was she a little bit late when you guys look back at that 1500? You know, it was interesting how there was an excuse as to why it came, but it finally came and we took it, right? So you guys can decide if you wanted to use that as leverage to redo something on this one. We just want the loan to perform again. There's the schedule and item C there, as you guys can see, like you literally could unwind a loan modification if they don't meet letter C. And we have people that have yet to provide that and are paying on a loan mod we gave them. And we kind of give them a kind little reminder, you are in default of the terms of your loan modification based on clause C, blah, blah, blah. And we go track these down. But a lot of times we get the loan mod on their first mortgage that comes in along with that. So definitely something you want to put in to all of your loan modifications. So let's jump forward here. You can just see the terms there of the permanent modification once it rolls, after it rolls into and rolls out of the trial period. There it is. And then just real quick on this, you can see year one, nice little yield on this in year one, little return. And again, we're just doing a simple little cash on cash there for you real quick. You can get real technical on figuring out what your returns are, but year two plus, if we end up keeping this loan in our portfolio, very simple to do. And then, so that's where we're at, guys. So I guess the question is, and I can't see the question box, but you guys chime in if you had 42,000, 43,000, you know, when at the time that this was offered up, would you guys have jumped at the chance to do this sub-performing deal? Anybody on the call today that would have done it? Let me know. And while they're answering that, Chris, and you guys can let me know if we got any people that would have done like we did. But we're going to jump into a quick. You got a few people that said yay. Some are non-participatory today, but that's okay. But
we have another question pending, so let me know when we can hit that.
Okay, so let's do this, guys. While we're going into this question and into the next little function, I wanted to add on this last little bit to our call right here, just for you guys to get a little practice and get out your 10B2s. Right, get out your 10B2s, and if you want to engage, I have like virtual eyes, you know, so I can like see if you're actually participating and doing the 10B2. I won't tell you how I do that. It's a secret power that I have, but I can know that you're participating. So we're going to jump in, and we want to, in 6 to 12 months, you guys own this loan, and for whatever reason, you have, you know, a lump sum need for some cash now. Right, you're saying, hey, we got to do this. So you've got investors you've been working with, and you got a guy that comes along and says, hey, you got anything at a 12% yield? And you know, you're outside of the trial period, just rolling into a permanent mod. They've given you 1500 down, 650 a month, and now you've said, well, wow, let me go dig into my inventory and see what we got. I just want to run you guys through this. So get your 10B2s out. And while that question's on the screen, why don't we hit the question that you have coming in before we jump into this? And some of you can be looking ahead. I'll give you the numbers here. In fact, let's do, I'll move forward to this screen and you guys can be figuring this out and typing it in the question box while we go through and answer the question that came in. So just get out your 10b-2, and what would you have to buy this particular loan at? You know, we've been through the 6 months seasoning on it, and you're like, okay, I got some money in an IRA, or I got an investor that's got 12%, or you might be looking to add something, you know. So just look at that and figure out that answer. And Kristen, while they're doing that, go ahead okay. and answer the question that came in.
Sure. So Phil, Philip Silver, he asked about, did I receive your hotline question about registering for the CFPB? And I apologize, I did respond to it, but it was at about 12:30 at night. So it did come through the same day that you asked that question. And we do have a webinar in the members area on how to register for the CFPB and what questions they're going to ask and what documents to be prepared to have on hand when you're registering on the portal. The CFPB is different. A CFPB, a QWR is different from registering on the CFPB portal. The CFPB portal is going to allow you, when a consumer launches a complaint with the CFPB, if you're registered on the portal, it's going to go ahead and alert you immediately, and you're going to be able to respond. And those responses, including complaints, are public records. So that's why it's a good idea to go ahead and register your business on the portal, the CFPB portal, so that you can, in the event that you do have some type of consumer complaint, you can speak for yourself and justify and post an answer to defend your business decisions or whatever the case may be. And it's different from adhering to the CFPB consumer guidelines, and that consumer bureau, that those guidelines were created to protect the consumer. So they definitely go hand in hand, but registering your business on the portal is different from just adhering to the CFPB guidelines. Okay, so if you have any additional questions on that, Phil, hit me up offline and I'll walk you through that. Let's see, Craig, he's into performings. And William is a maybe. Can I get a loan? Okay, so Dirk is asking,
Hold on. Remember, guys, this is a performing loan. This is a performing loan right now. It now has 6 months of seasoning. So they're going to figure it out. So has anyone typed in the answer of what they would need to purchase this loan at if they wanted a 12% yield? Did anyone type in an answer?
Let me see here. I'm going to the questions.
Or is it going out on me? Anyone type in the right answer?
Offer the note for $61,100, assuming 350 payments left from the work.
Okay, so now remember, after 6 months, we still have all 360 payments left, guys, because why? Because we haven't entered into the permanent mod yet. They've just done the six payments in the trial plan.
Okay, I have another response here. 61,231.36.
Okay, very good. Let's go ahead and see for those of you who participated.
Another 61,000.
Okay, so there you see it, guys.
Same
12% yield. 12% yield. There's your purchase price of the 108,000 of UPB. Now, do you have to sell the whole loan outright? I know some people that are advocates of, why don't I sell off a payment stream and just sell the front end of those payments? You can definitely do that. And you know, we've done that and look to do that some more. Some of the loans we just sell outright because that's what the investor wants. So this is a loan in 6 months. Right, you have flexibility if this was in your portfolio. So let's just look real quick. What's the discount? Decent discount, 46,701. And I get people that ask me all the time, why would you let that go? Why would you not sell a partial? Right, and again, it's preference, you guys. You could sell a partial on that. You could hypothecate that note. There's just a lot of different things you can do. But if that's a note that you said, hey, I need to get liquid. And for those of you that are doing the math, you remember roughly what we are into that note for, right? You can see that there's a surge of cash. The difference between 61 and change and 42 and change, you know, there's a little equity bump there, a little cash surge if you needed some cash now. So,
Alan says you need to refine for the 3 months, but he's 61K. And then of course, Alan, your Excel formulas win. He says Excel formulas win. He's our Excel man.
I know it. So guys, that's what we've got today. And you know, we get a lot of questions on, you know, people saying, hey, if I was brokering that deal, you know, what could I make? And you know, really it's just, you know, we'll do more and more training on that as well, because people are wanting to do a little bit of, go ahead.
There's last two questions for you. And Jan is just wants to know why your number is different when she does in T value and the 10B. 61,284.49 is what she comes up with. She just is trying to understand why your number is a little different.
Jan, you just literally went above my pay grade. I will openly admit that I would want to bring Marcus Malika on and let him teach us why it's different. You know, I used a 10B2 and it looks like I just lost out on, actually, it looks like I just made more than if I would have sold it via T value.
Now, but a hypothetical question.
But go ahead.
What amount can you borrow using this note as your collateral?
That's a question that came in.
Yeah.
That's a really good question, and I think you know that it's kind of a loaded question, because you want to be real careful with that, because if you have someone that trusts you, right, and would give you, hey, I need to borrow money, and you're going to give them security of that loan, you're going to hypothecate it, they might loan you up to the full value. It's just, you got to be smart, right? But on something like that, you know, I've done typically 70%. Sometimes it's an equity driven thing and coverage on the property. Sometimes it's not for us. Right. So people want to hypothecate. And at the end of the day, I, you know, on some of those, I've done a personal guarantee.
Now,
so you just got to be real careful. You got to be real careful. What's that?
Would your target be a bank or private party?
Great question. And on this particular loan, this would definitely be a private party. A bank's probably not going to touch this, just because one, it's a second position. Two, there's very little equity coverage. Right. And, you know, on the bulk of the investment. So, you know, this is something where you just have to say, hey, I'm banking on this lady, not letting this house go. And it's, for some people, that's not enough. So that's a great question, you guys. And on a hypothecation, what, you know, that's something, you know, I'm going to do more and more of, you know, along with what some of the stuff we're doing with land contracts and creating different cash flow streams from scratch. We're looking at a commercial deal right now that a person just couldn't get qualified for their SBA loan, and they've got a seller that needs to sell the building, and their business has been in the landlord needs to sell, has two other properties they're selling, and then there's one where, you know, the tenant's been there for 6 years and it's their business. They got a showroom, they got everything in there. So that's something that, you know, you can create some, they just need someone to come in and teach them how to finance it, you know, get the other person cashed out. And then from there, create some spreads for everybody involved where there's a win-win-win. So hopefully we can get that deal done. But great questions, you guys. I got, on a scale of 1 to 10, I got to give you guys an 11 today. I am impressed.
I got more.
I'm very impressed. Oh my goodness. Well, let's roll. Keep it rolling.
Great. So there's a demand for, where can I get information on phone banking? And so we, if that phone banking, like a general list of more common companies with their phone numbers and fax numbers, if that's it's not in the members area. Let me check with John after the call, Craig, and see if that is in the members area. If it's not, that's something that I can absolutely share.
Yeah, and if there's ever a specific situation where you're trying to get payoff information on a first, Craig, just reach out too. Like if it's something that we can help you out with, that's key. So good questions. Any other questions before we sign off, you guys?
Just Dirk, he's always full of good, great questions, and we would agree with you, Dirk.
Very good. All right, guys, here's some final dates for you. Just kind of a review of those. And for those of you who are joining us in Las Vegas, we will just see you in less than 48 hours? Yeah, less than 48 hours. We will see you there. For those that aren't joining us, we will catch up with you. Hopefully you can make our April mastermind. We look forward to that. Now, so 4/12, that's right. And then we got the mastermind coming up and the workshop coming up there. So, all right, guys, reach out to us via email if there's anything else or through the hotline submission. And we look forward to answering your questions and helping you continue to grow your passive income. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.